Hello. Welcome to Two Coffee Teachers. I'm Josh.
And I am Alex, and we are two young educators who really want to contribute to our field. So on this podcast, we're talking about education. We're talking about relevant content that we can apply in our classroom. So it's our hope that this podcast can also encourage our fellow educators without needing that second cup of coffee.
Hey, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you're a regular subscriber, thanks for tuning in. We hope you had a lovely holiday and you're ready to rock and roll, move forward with us as classes start up again.
Absolutely. So for today's main topic, we're going to be talking about merit pay, but we actually have a pretty busy schedule. So
we got a lot to do.
To start off, we're going to touch on some of our follow-up question responses. So as you all know, we on our Twitter and our Facebook group, we put up feedback and response questions and discussion questions so we can continue those conversations outside the podcast.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are responding, thank you so much for answering our questions and joining that conversation. As a little bit of an incentive for all of you all to continue to get involved with these conversations, we're going to play back your voicemails, or we're going to include your tweets or your Facebook posts on our podcast so everyone can get really excited about contributing to the conversation and be a part of the show.
And touch on things that, you know, we didn't necessarily cover on here, but we wanted to reemphasize or bring attention to that we thought was valuable. I'll go ahead. Bring forward our the couple things we want to highlight. So we're talking about from our unconference episode where we talked to first-year teachers and we talked about the JMU unconference. That was a couple episodes ago. But we're going to reference a couple of responses we thought were awesome. In response to the question, what is some advice you'd give to a first-year teacher? We had one great response from Jen Newton. Her response was, go easy on yourself. It's really, really hard work. Trust your instincts and find strengths in each student. I think that's great advice.
Yeah, Jen is is currently a professor out in St. Louis at St. Louis University. So a former professor of ours during our undergraduate time at JMU. So.
Great support of the podcast.
She's great. Thank you. So thank you, Jen, for that feedback. But yeah, I really appreciate that advice too. I think that's definitely useful in making sure that we're not stressed. We're taking it easy. We're building as well.
Work hard. Find strength in your students. Find something to praise them for. You know, find value in them. Hey, if those are two things we're doing, we must be doing something right, you know?
Thinking back to our time with Jen, there's one thing that she said that I think is relevant to that statement right there, and it's that there is no such thing as a bad student, right? Mm. So it is really important that we look at each student individually, find the positives in them, and then use those positives to make their experience in our classroom beneficial.
Yeah. Also, we got another great response from Katie Dredger. She said that her advice to new teachers that she passes down from her cooperating teacher when she was in student teaching is that a school year is a marathon. Pace yourself and take care of yourself, which is also pretty solid advice.
Yeah, always important to stay on top of our lesson planning, making sure we're always looking down the road, plan ahead. Failing to plan is planning to fail.
Ooh, there you go.
That little curveball.
I liked that. No, that was good. No,
I wasn't even looking at the show notes for that. I just threw that one in.
He just just lobbed that into the conversation. Guys, our responders on Twitter, guys who are contributing to our conversations after the episode, thanks so much for being part of it. We value what you guys have to contribute to, you know, the topics that we're trying to tackle.
So now as we're moving into the new year, I want to touch on a little bit of political legislation that has come about that might be of importance for all of us.
What could that possibly
educators.
Be that's important
that
in education
piece of,
lately?
Little piece of education related policy is the newest proposed version, or excuse me, the newest signed bill, which is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, otherwise known as the ESEA reauthorization. So
just a little piece of legislation.
So basically,
right?
this is the follow-up to No Child Left Behind, right? So No Child Left Behind passed back in 2001. That was the big new progressive piece of legislation that was going to set the standard and really emphasize and impact education throughout the United States, right?
Yeah.
But I think the biggest part of No Child Left Behind was the lofty is a fair lofty goal that after a certain amount of time, we would have 100% proficiency ratings for standardized testing.
I mean, is 100% really feasible? Like 100%?
Well, let's think about it this way, right? So if we're, say we're at a high achieving school that has 93% passing rate.
Sure.
That's pretty darn good, right?
Right, but 100%?
Now, mathematically speaking, so say from 93%, you have just about 9 out of 10 kids in your classroom that are passing the exam, right?
Yeah.
Is it really feasible to continue to emphasize getting those extra two kids to pass that exam? Now, from a mathematical standpoint, I think it's pretty difficult to attain 100% status, especially when you think about all the other situations that are going on that student's life.
Sure.
And again, when it's 9 out of 10, you just need one kid. I think that puts it into a simpler term. But when you have an entire school and you just have a small window to get those kids to pass, I think that's a little bit more difficult, especially as incentives and rewards that are passed down from the school or passed down from the state to those schools.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to obtain those incentives when you already are a successful school as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe with a lesser successful school, maybe one that originally started with a 60% passing rate.
Sure.
And all of a sudden you have a lot more of a student body to work with. So you're more likely to see those gradual increases.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately with going back to the ESEA, this got rid of that. This piece of legislation got rid of that. And I think it's important because the problem was that not necessarily the goal in trying to get every school and every student to pass standardized tests. The problem was that schools that really needed the help the most when trying to reach that goal were actually being punished for not meeting increments. So the schools that needed help the most were being punished.
Right.
So instead of providing them with more with technology, new textbooks, other sort of
resources
to, or reading specialists or whatever sort of resource that school needed. Instead of providing more to that school to try and set that school up for success, they started taking that stuff away. And that made life I think that made life pretty stressful amongst teachers, because all of a sudden your job and how you are measured and evaluated as a teacher is tied to this giant piece of legislation. I think that caused a lot of stress amongst teachers. Just kind of talking with
professors. I'm stressed talking about
and,
it. Yeah.
Thinking back to our time as younger elementary, middle, secondary ed students when there was such an emphasis on testing and passing. And
back in the day.
I think now, reflecting back to that, I can tell that my teachers were always a little more uptight.
A little more on edge. Yeah.
When it came time for testing. I think with this new law, pretty much going in a U-turn away from that is going to be helpful in making the lives of teachers a little bit less stressful.
Yeah, it's going to take a load off of them for sure.
But ultimately, I think this what's also important about this new piece of legislation is that the states now get a lot more discretion and a lot more input into how they want to set goals and figure out what they want or what is appropriate to hold schools, districts, and then teachers accountable.
Yeah. Because maybe the blanket every state the same way method didn't work as effectively as they had hoped.
Yeah, this
lofty. Yeah.
And this legislation is also going to be helpful in allowing these states and districts to use locally developed and evidence-based like interventions with those struggling bottom 5% schools. So instead of having a national mandate that requires certain interventions with struggling schools or certain financial ties, it's now left up to the states, who are probably going to be a lot more familiar with certain districts and the circumstances behind.
I mean,
certain schools.
Even logistically, I'm thinking like if we're doing one thing down here, Virginia or Maryland, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have 48 other labs essentially of all everyone's trying something different. Then we're going to say, oh my gosh, what are they doing in Idaho or Maine? Or Texas, that's like, oh, we should do that here, you know? And I think that'll be a really cool opportunity for us to watch what others are doing.
Yeah, so by the end of the before the start of the 2017-2018 school year, every state has to submit their newly developed accountability plan to the Department of Education. So it's going to be very interesting to see in the next probably 6 to 12 months or so how certain states are going to be reacting to this bill and how that's going to affect us as teachers. So something to keep in mind on moving forward, and especially once we get our first jobs too.
Yeah, and I'm sure this will be something that we cover further on the podcast as it develops and as we kind of see what the fruits of this new legislation is. And I think that'll be really interesting to play in on for our audience. I hope you guys are looking forward to that too.
So at this point, you want to start talking about our main topic for today?
Yeah, so we're talking about merit pay this week.
Dun, 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 dun.
And this is such a fickle topic, Alex.
Why do you say that?
I mean, I've been thinking about it for a little bit, and it's you know, it's not clear cut, you know? It's not one of those things that's very black or white. It's gray, mm-hmm. right? And I think there are a lot of different schools of thought about it, and I don't know which one's right. You know,
okay.
So I think it's something that I want to explore with you. You know,
okay.
You know, you and I definitely take an authentic approach to the podcast, and that we don't pretend to know everything.
Yeah.
And this is something that frankly I want to know more about, and I want to explore, especially as I'm going out into the workforce.
Sure.
So you know, Alex, let me take you down my perspective here. I have been starting the job search. It's that time of year.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to figure out, like, okay, what does it look like to work in X, Y, and Z?
Okay.
And so one of those things that I look up when I'm starting to look into a district is obviously the salary. What is the salary of that job for my position relative to the cost of living and the standard of living and all of that stuff?
Yeah, sure.
And so I think about the fact, well, okay, let's round up. Let's say I get paid $45,000 for a district starting, okay? Solid, but we're rounding. Would incentives of, like, increased pay based on performance, you know, how would that affect my teaching, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, how incentivized would you be as a teacher if there was merit pay, you know?
It definitely, well, it depends on where the merit's going, right?
So sure.
If merit pay is based on how I'm doing as a club leader or or even as a coach, then obviously I'm going to put a lot of time into the organization or the team that I'm going to be working on.
Yeah.
If merit pay is based on how the kids are doing with standardized tests, then you know I'm going to focus as much as I can on the SOL or on the Common Core standards or the regents or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if I'm graded based on, or if my merit's based on what the actual letter grades are for my students, then maybe your grade inflation might be affected. Or what if it's even a matter of you have 10 observations and during those observations, we are evaluated based on how we're able to connect with students or how we're able to engage with them in higher order thinking.
Yeah.
There's so many different little routes.
Ways to measure it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I mean, I think if merit pay were to be implemented nationwide, just hypothetically, then I think it would need to be very clear as to which little branch you're going down,
mm-hmm.
or it needs to be a combination, the whole package, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think about two schools of thought. So there's a lot that, like, the teachers could receive more pay for their work on standardized testing or how their students perform, and that's how we measure a certain test, which isn't inherently bad. But then I think about the students that don't always excel with standardized testing or don't reflect the investment that I put into that student,
yeah.
right? So if I kill it in one-to-one relationships to my students, but my students don't do as well, but they have a stronger sense of community in that classroom and they're learning something on a deeper level, does that mean that I'm not reflected as well as the teacher, that they didn't learn as much?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this idea that I've been batting around about, like, the whole, like, all the students, the whole student. And I want to introduce you briefly to a guy that I've heard from on another podcast called Freakonomics. Have you heard of Freakonomics before?
Yeah.
They were doing an interview with a gentleman. His name is Dr. Dan Gilbert.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Dan Gilbert is a Harvard University psychology professor. He's written books. He's on insurance commercials. You've probably seen him before. He has a very nice voice. He's a pretty cool guy. But he didn't graduate high school. He's okay. He's got a ton of degrees, but he didn't graduate high school. And I heard this quote. I want to read it to you and see what your thoughts are in regard to merit pay, all right? So he said on one of these podcasts, he said, somewhere around the age of 16, I had the epiphany that adults had very little to teach me that I wanted to know. My high school thought that was a pretty bad attitude, so we had a parting of ways. So a guy like that, clearly very intelligent, clearly hardworking, but it wasn't being met in like a standardized educational system, right? So if we go with merit pay, are we rewarding teachers for having students pass a test? Or how can we reward teachers for reaching the needs of students beyond the fact that it's just their job? You know, that's kind of what I'm struggling with. How do we meet the kid like Dr. Dan Gilbert? How do we make that kid when I'm concerned about getting an extra $1,500 for my achievement? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm really wrestling with where does that fit in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you're right. It depends on a lot of factors. It depends on funding. It depends on, what we choose to assess on. And it depends on, how everyone else is doing retrospectively. If everybody raises the bar and the bar gets raised, and I don't know, it's just something that I've been bouncing around a lot. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. And again, with so many factors, I think one big thing that we have to consider when debating whether or not merit pay in education is right or wrong, with our students and meeting that student, we're not the only one that is, we are not the only one that's going to affect that student's academic achievement, right?
So yeah.
If that's what control do we have over a kid who might have a difficult family background or might have to work time or like spend time after school working a job or is very involved, or what we're going to do for the kids that might not have been adequately prepared coming into our class, right? So there's so many different things that kind of play into a student's sphere of influence and what we can do in our classroom. But then again, on the flip side, say with medicine, it's really difficult to like measure one's individual performance
or their own growth. Well, okay,
yeah.
Rebuttal to that. What if we pre-assess? We pre-assess up front, and we have a summative post-assessment, and we see their own.
So your
growth.
Merit's based on.
So
the
is it merit? It's merits based on the growth of each student, not like the total gear of the whole class. You know, raising the bar for everybody, but mm-hmm. like their own.
But then we also get into that conversation of what if you are a teacher who has all the AP and honor students or all the gifted and talented students.
Yeah.
And say that that bar is already close to the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot more difficult to raise that bar.
Yeah.
Even more.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
is
know.
Is it like when if you're talking about growth, are you talking about growth per unit overall?
Yeah.
Is it growth? Is it a certain percentage? Like,
yeah.
Regardless of if you're an ELL student, if you're a special needs student, or if you're an AP physics student,
right.
do you measure the growth from A to B?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I even think about, like co-teaching situations. I think that would make it even trickier,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, if you and I were competing for funding that was awarded based on how well our students did, and you and I are in a co-teaching situation
mm-hmm.
as well, like, we're going to be hyper-competitive almost.
Yeah.
And so is this merit pay supposed to reach all teachers? Is it supposed to reach teachers who we need to incentivize to do better?
Yeah.
Is it meant for, you know, just providing an extra incentive to do your job well?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know how well that's going to increase community amongst staff when we're competing for, like, a set level of funding. You know what I mean?
Now, what would really make sense if in terms of, like, the merit pay argument? Instead of competing against each other, you're competing against other schools.
Right? So team effort.
So think of it like I'm going to try. When I was doing research, I came across this argument. I'm going to try and relate it to say we'll just talk hockey, for example,
because that's your thing.
Because that's my thing. So say that we are in the league. We are in the National Education League, the NEL.
Okay. All right.
So let's say that we have 30 schools, and let's say all these 30 schools are in one county.
Yeah.
Okay. So say that your merit, you're competing, not necessarily, again, you might be competing with, or your merit might be rewarded based on subject.
Okay.
Or maybe based on growth within those subjects, or maybe even based on performance, like I mentioned earlier, with clubs and organizations and sports and stuff. So all the, or theater or band or whatever it may be, right? So that with certain maybe indicators, you're trying to see how you as a staff, as a team, can do against these other schools. Now, on each team, there's certain specialties, right? So, like, with hockey, the goalie, right? If you have a good goalie, you're going to go really far. You're going to do really well in the season. They're going to hold your back, and they are going to ultimately carry you to the Stanley Cup. So they might be a $5 million player, right?
Wow, okay.
If only teachers got $5 million.
Yeah, if only we got $5 million, right?
But say that goalie is a $5 million asset to the team, right?
Okay.
But then say there's the fourth line, doesn't only plays maybe 7 to 10 minutes a night, but you send that person out to win a faceoff in your defensive zone or to kill a penalty, and they're a valuable asset to that team, don't get me wrong, but maybe they're only a $2 million player. So still obviously valuable, and they still play a significant role for that team.
Sure.
But you're not carrying as much as, say, the goalie.
Yeah.
Now, keep that in mind with – let's bring this back to academics now.
Bring it back.
So what if we have merit pay where the core four, so you have science,
math
English, social studies. Those teachers are like your goaltenders, right? And then maybe, again, I'm not saying that
other disciplines that are not
other
important.
Disciplines, yeah, aren't important or don't bring as much value. But what if there was some sort of formula where success in different disciplines or different organizations were valued at certain things, and then how that school performs on that, then teachers will receive different merits and compensation based on how they're doing in their subjects versus teachers in other subjects.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So
yeah, there's
or even if it's even if it's just the same borderline or same baseline merit pay across all disciplines, you might get a certain percentage of that merit based on how you're doing and how you're helping the overall school versus other schools.
Yeah.
So that could be another way to think about it too. But then again, you're still, the question comes into play, well, what are we being measured on? Are you being measured on grades, growth, standardized testing?
Yeah.
What is it?
What's the appropriate way to do that?
Because when you start tying in money, then you might be on certain things, and you might be more focused on that specific area. So I might be more focused on, like I said earlier in the podcast, more focused on testing rather than making connections to student lives, right? You start the whole teach to the test thing or wherever it may be. So
yeah.
I think ultimately, if at least my own opinion here, if merit pay gets introduced, then there has to be a very fair way to measure or at least to justify the measurement of what I guess is being taken into account. So it can't just be testing, it can't just be grades, it can't just be one's observant ability to connect to the lives of the students. It's got to be the whole package. And if merit pay is going to come into play, then the districts or the states have to figure out a way to tie in the whole package.
Yeah.
Because that way teachers can focus on doing their jobs, and they can focus on trying to be the best teacher there is to be without putting their eggs in one basket, per se.
Yeah, I got you.
I think that'd be my two cents on merit pay.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to be said about appropriate competition, and even beyond that, like how we assess how well they're doing, and really getting the whole package. I don't know exactly how to do that. I'm sure it could be a collection or smorgasbord of assessments, observations, and the like. But there, I mean, even if you think about the other thing I've been thinking about with this is like motivation. So mm-hmm. like, obviously teachers don't get paid enough. I think teachers don't get paid enough. We should get
$5 million to my first employer.
Yeah, I think so. I think we all want that. But if you think about motivation, there's a lot of science and like psychology about motivation. And I think I mentioned it briefly earlier as we're like working through this topic, like that I, again, teachers don't get paid enough. We should all get paid $5 million. But at what is the point where money isn't the issue anymore? Like, there are some teachers that love their job. You can pay them $32,000 a year. They'll do it all the time. And you want those teachers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then there are other teachers who are maybe less enthused, maybe more apathetic. Not that they're not good at their job, but, you know, they could use a little more cajoling. Maybe they're discouraged. And merit pay would be good because, like, you could get money for doing your job better, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the line for how much money or incentive has to be put on the line for a teacher to up their game? You know what I mean? Because there's such psychology out there that says, like, have you ever read Drive by Pink, David or Daniel Pink? It's a book called Drive. It's about what motivates people and why we do the things we do. And one of the things he points out in there is that a lot of people's motivation doesn't come from money or like incentivizing. It's think about the great example I read from here. It's gonna make sense in a second. Is Wikipedia. Okay, so 1990s, there was Microsoft was putting together the encyclopedia on CD-ROMs. It was brilliant. It was all on CD-ROMs. It was from a credible corporation, and it was like a guarantee. This is gonna do well. Now, taking a step back, if you were 1995 and I approached you and said, "Hey, Alex, would you rather use the Windows CD-ROM encyclopedia or this internet encyclopedia contributed by people who aren't experts in that field?" What would you have said that you would rather read?
Probably the expert one, right?
Probably the expert CD-ROM one.
Yeah.
But now no one knows what I'm talking about when I say Windows CD-ROMs. They know exactly what I talk about when I reference Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're like, people are excited and want to do well to contribute to this creative part of them. You know what I mean? There's this drive, get it? Drive that, like, what really incentivizes people is, like, meaning and creating something that they can be proud of, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, how much does financial incentives work relative to phrasing our jobs instead of work, but as creative opportunities to teach our students? Do you see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is the line? Do I need to offer a teacher $12,000 extra a year to get them to do their job like I want them to? You know? And I think that's what a lot of people wrestle with, too. Like, where is the line? We said this a couple of times. Where is the line with this merit pay?
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I'd love to hear what all of you have to say about it.
Yeah, this is something, again, we don't pretend to be experts on this show. We're authentic learners and educators who want to grow, and we hope you guys contribute to that as well.
Well, with that being said, I think I enjoy this conversation. I enjoy all our conversations.
Oh, good. Thanks, buddy.
But I think with merit pay, you can go back and forth. You can look at the pros and the cons, and it's a tough system to develop. The people that are for it have a good idea in mind that they want to improve the state of education, improve the lives of the students, and make great teachers.
And that are paid well.
Might
make $5 million.
But with those on the flip side, I could also see how incorporating merit pay is going to be can create problems and maybe shift the focus towards things that aren't going to be beneficial to our students.
Yeah.
So, there are a lot of different ways. I'd love to hear what all of you, our listeners, have to say. Let's please continue this conversation that we've had today through social media and Facebook. The Facebook group is Two Coffee Teachers. Our Twitter is at the number 2 Coffee Teachers, and our hashtag is hashtag 2CTChat. Please leave us a voicemail, too. I think we haven't had a voicemail in a couple weeks. Love to hear what you have to say.
Audibly from your voice. Yeah.
Actually want to hear your voice. That number is 443-300-8908.
We'd also love it if you could rate us on iTunes. This is the number one way that we get the podcast into the hands, the devices, and the ears, ultimately, of people that we're not in the same circles with. The goal is to get us on the new and new noteworthy on iTunes. That's the goal. That's what I'm shooting for. That's what we're shooting for. And we just want to get this in the hands of people who can enjoy it, too. So rate us on iTunes. That would be awesome. Just take a few minutes. Give us 5 stars. Tell us what you think.
We're dreaming big like No Child Left Behind back in 2001.
Oh, maybe. Got him.
Sorry that you should have said that.
You're good.
We're dreaming big. We want to be we want to have that nice presence.
We want to make an impact.
For sure.
Thanks so much for being a part of the Two Coffee Teacher podcast this week. Keep it up, all the good work in the classroom, guys, without needing that second cup of coffee.
See ya. I can see the sweet sun pouring down in the strawberry sky. Tall grass dancing down by the St. John's River side. And I can see Maggie running through the fields full of wild.